Welcome to Quipper UU Fellowship. We hope you enjoy this recording from our October 8th service. Kate Lohr's sermon topic is The Infinite Expansion of the Heart. The music following the sermon is Meditation by Jules Massenet, performed by Akui Goldstein. Thanks for listening.
Our reading this morning is by Rumi. It's entitled Ode 314, which I just don't think does it justice. So I gave it an alternative title, Awakening to Love. Those who don't feel this love pulling them like a river, those who don't drink dawn like a cup of spring water, or take in sunset like supper, those who don't want to change, let them sleep. This love is beyond the study of theology, that old trickery and hypocrisy. If you want to improve your mind that way, sleep on. I've given up on my brain. I've torn the cloth to shreds and thrown it away. If you're not completely naked, wrap your beautiful robe of words around you and sleep. So ends the reading. Believe in hell? He asks me. The question comes out of nowhere, and I am startled by the intimacy of the question. I don't even know this man, after all. He is simply a fellow traveler on the Greyhound bus. Yes, I had smiled at him earlier and said hello when our eyes had met. But I wasn't expecting such an intense and probing religious question from a stranger. Do I believe in hell? That's just not something you ask a stranger. Still, there is a sincerity to his question that I just can't ignore. He's hanging on the edge of his seat, waiting for my response. I pause for a moment, taking a quick inventory of him. He seems to be about 30, long, greasy hair. He's disheveled. Maybe he's mentally ill. He's wearing army fatigues. And there's that dark cloud of sorrow all around him. The year is 1979, so I'm guessing he's a Vietnam vet. Kate, you can't ignore this kind of pain, I chide myself. At this point in my life, I'm on track to become a minister, and I'm taking the bus home from college for winter break. But I have ridden on enough Greyhound buses to know that you take a risk when you're too talkative with strangers, especially men. But this time, I'm going to take a risk anyway. I do, after all, have an answer for him. No, I finally say, I do not believe in hell. But do you believe in God? Oh, great, I say to myself, here we go. I'm about to be on the bus for 5 hours with this guy, and the last thing I want to do is be stuck on a bus with someone trying to save my soul the whole time. But still, something compels me to continue. Yes, I say, I do believe in God. But God is really clear about the dangers of hell, he insists. Haven't you read the Bible? Many times, I reply, many times. Then how can you not believe in hell? Well, sir, I tell him, I believe that the Bible does a great job of reflecting the religious beliefs held by a certain people at a certain time in history, but I also believe that no one can ever speak on behalf of God. Really? He responds, you don't believe the Bible is the word of God? No, I do not. He cringes. I continue. That doesn't mean that I don't take the Bible seriously. I most certainly do, but I believe in a loving God, a God so loving, in fact, that he or she or whatever God is would never condemn anyone to eternal damnation. Are you Catholic? He asks. No, I'm United Methodist, which I was at that time. Tell me more about what you believe, he says, and I do. It's still another 30 minutes before departure time, and my traveling companion asks me question after question. He seems most interested in my views on sin. Sin is about missing the mark, I tell him. It can be corrected. We can ask for forgiveness, change our behavior, and try again. God forgives us every single time. But God judges those who sin, he insists. Perhaps, I reply, but more significantly, God loves you in a way far greater than you can imagine. God also gave you free will. Why would a loving God then turn around and condemn you to hell for using it? Oh, he says, that would be cruel. It wouldn't be fair for God to trick us like that. No, it wouldn't, I reply. God's love for us is too great for that. I see him pondering the idea, and then he visibly relaxes. Our conversation continues until I hear that telltale sound of the rumbling, downshifting greyhound as it rounds the corner into the station. It pulls up to the curb, the door swings open with a loud, steamy hiss, and all around me, people are now queuing up to get on board. And I squeeze myself into line. But it is then that I notice that the man isn't queuing up with me. I look for him, worried suddenly, and then spot him in the crowd heading in the opposite direction. He turns around then and looks for me. And when our eyes connect, he dramatically holds up his bus ticket and rips it in two. What are you doing? I ask him over the throng. I don't need this anymore, he shouts. You see, it's a one-way ticket. Up until this moment, I was going to take that ticket to the ocean and drown myself. But I don't need to anymore, because there's no hell, and I no longer have to be afraid. I don't understand the logic, but am relieved to witness this change of heart. He then turns on his heels and disappears, and I never see him again. This is a true story, also an important story, even though I share it with just a little reticence. You see, we're still getting to know each other, and you don't actually know what I believe. In fact, I'm guessing that some of you may have taken a mental note during the part of the story where I profess my belief in God, and you've whispered to yourself, oh, so she's a theist. And that, my friends, would not be quite accurate. You see, remember, I was 19 at the time that that story unfolded, and my theology now is decidedly more naturalistic. That is, I don't find much reason to speak about God as a supernatural entity, but rather as an immanent force in the natural world. I still don't believe in hell. I believe that we will all end up in the same place when we die. I believe that paradise is possible right here, and that love is the answer to all of life's questions. In other words, I'm a universalist. Specifically, a Clarence Skinner kind of universalist. In his 1945 work, A Religion for Greatness, universalist minister and social activist, Clarence Skinner emphasize our religious call to work towards the unity of all beings. He called us to what he called the cosmic mindset, in which we all realized our connection to and our unity with everything that is, everything that has been, and everything that will be. Thus we are one with the stars, with the planets, with the oceans and mountains and ice caps, with the forests and deserts and all the fauna running through them. We are also, of course, one with one another. And so an injury to one really is an injury to all. And thus we are here to love and care for one another. And the reason why I just shared my bus station experience with you this morning was so that you might recognize the power of our faith. You see, when I was speaking to the man in the Greyhound bus station, I was introducing him to the universalism that I had learned as a UU youth. And I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that the spirit of love at the heart of universalism saved that man's life. Now, our contemporary Unitarian Universalism is rooted in this deep universalist love. This explains why we do not separate the damned from the saved, nor the sinner from the saint, and on our best days, nor do we separate the Republicans from the Democrats. Rather, we affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and this respect extends to each thread in the interdependent web of which we are a part. So as it is important that some of us do and some of us don't believe in the God of our original universalists. What is important is that our belief that we are all one people who share the same destiny, that we are interdependent with all of life, and that we have a moral obligation to take care of one another. This shift over the years explains why it is we changed the words to that song that we sing our kids out to Sunday school with. Our original words and are still sung at First Church Portland and in a few congregations is, "May the love of God surround you." But that's not what we sing here and in most congregations, right? We sing, "May the spirit of love surround you." Because for us, the spirit of love is inclusive enough and powerful enough to encompass all the diversities of perspectives here at QUUF. It also explains why we're drawn to poets like Rumi, who speak of love in its very highest form and who reminds us that love is the means by which human beings awaken and become who we are most deeply meant to be. And I cannot think of a more relevant topic to speak about this Sunday, for many of us are struggling with what's happening in our country right now. Some of us even think our world is going to hell. We do have several narcissistic world leaders, including our own president. We have far too many weapons at our disposal. We are experiencing extreme weather events and climate changes that threaten our very survival. And if that isn't enough, we lack the unity profoundly by which we can come together for those solutions to these problems. Yes, some days it does feel like our world is going to hell. And just as it was with the man in the Greyhound bus station, the fear and anxiety, despair and hopelessness can feel so overwhelming at times, we just want to give up. But we cannot forget from whence we came. We are a people rooted in the universalist tradition. Thus, we know that fear, anxiety, despair, and hopelessness will never save us. No, these emotions, as understandable as they are, will only make us feel smaller and will sometimes even separate us or give us that sense of separation from the love that exists all around us and holds us always. So it is love that will expand us. It is love that will stretch us beyond the smallness of our individual lives, our individual levels of consciousness. It is love and only love that is powerful enough to reconnect us with our original unity, even as we face the dangerous divisions before us now. And this all brings me back to you. I've only been here a month, and yet I already recognize that you are amazingly adept at this love thing. In fact, it seems to be your primary unifying spiritual practice. And so I'm actually going to do something a little different this morning. I'm going to stop doing all the talking as an expert, and I'm going to come down onto the floor, and I'm going to ask something of you. I'm going to ask what each of you does, not each of you, some of you, does on a daily basis to practice love, because I see it, and I want you to share it, because we need to inspire each other. So I'm going to give you a moment to pull your thoughts together, and then I'm going to come down, and if you have something that you're willing to share that awakens you to love's power, or just feels like a loving thing to do for others, I'm going to ask you to raise your hand and share.
I love and listen to and appreciate my Republican husband.
That's powerful love. Yes. Wait, was that a hand? Here you go.
I feel love when I tend my garden. I feel love when I cook dinner for my partner. And I feel love when I hold a purring kitty on my lap.
Thank you.
I give support to those with brain disorders.
Ah.
I make quilts to give away as hugs.
I've fostered about 300 dogs and cats.
Wow.
We feed birds, and it's become squirrels. And now we have a little one that eats out of our hand.
I crochet little doodaddy things for my grandkids. Right now I'm making spiders and ghosts to send them for Halloween.
I take my two sweet, loving dogs for joyful walks.
It may seem like a small thing, but I go on Facebook, and I have Facebook friends that may be their only human contact during the day, and I make a comment or I say a like, and they know they are recognized.
Indeed.
I take my dog, Izzy, to read to Rover at Grant Street, where kids read to her. I play piano for people that have Alzheimer's, and I smile at strangers on the bus.
Yes.
Well, each day, when I'm faced with a multitude of decisions, they could range from my wife asking something of me and me feeling, what does she really want? I'm trying to support that. Or something as small as seeing an ant crawling along the counter. And instead of giving in to my impulse to mash it, putting it on a piece of paper and launching it into the garden, I try to make the world a better place with my decisions.
Wow. I told you.
I'm still a child at heart, as most anybody who knows me would confer. My first instinct is to engage in a fun way. I'm always a jokester. I love joking with people, whether it's a checkout person in a supermarket or anyone. And our five kids recognize this because they know my code is that silliness is next to godliness.
Love it. I love it. Okay. One more. Somebody reports that there's a hand back here.
I share my research and my continuing
study of aggression with whomever I can to try and make this a better world for all of us.
Thank you, Hal. Okay. Just want to name all of the collective wisdom that exists here. And I want to end, first I'm going to hand this to you, and then I want to give you one more example. And this is an example I encountered here my very first week. And I was so moved by it, I put it on Facebook. And it's been shared and liked by hundreds because it's that powerful. And it came from here. It's the group covenant. We agree to give love a central place in our work and to widen the circle of compassion to individuals of all species. We believe the shifting paradigm from human dominance to a reverence for all life is key to healing the world. Growing our skills and capacity for compassionate communication, we will act in ways that nourish one another and support our multi-species communities. We will communicate with truth and respect, being gentle and forgiving others and ourselves when we make mistakes. So there you have it. What a great example of universalist love. And with no mention of that confusing word, God. This covenant and the examples that you shared give me great confidence that the collective wisdom that exists here is enough to begin turning the tide of the hellish hate and division we now face. Unity and love and recognition of the value of those already exists here. What we need to do now is spread that love out into the world. How? By making it a daily practice, or to use the words of John Wesley, love all you can, by all the means you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can. This is the all-encompassing, life-saving love at the center of our faith. So let us go forth now and love the hell out of the world.